At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Defense Department of the future involves artificial intelligence, yes, something called robots, but the robots are getting more and more sophisticated. Humans are involved, but the decision-making is everything. And I welcome Patrick Tucker of Defense One, the technology editor, to tell us how the Air Force is thinking, how the Navy is thinking, how the Army is thinking about interrelating with machines that have software in them that far outproduce the ability of human beings to make decisions at the moment. We're looking now at communications deep inside enemy lines or deep in the water or behind enemy lines walking with a combat unit. Patrick, a very good evening to you. The B-21, that's the future for the Air Force. The excitement is obvious. Why the excitement is the puzzle. You explicate that they're looking at the B-21 not only as a platform to deliver a weapon, but also as a communications center. How so? And is this similar to what the F-35 can do, become an AWACS in combat?
The vision a little bit, this comes from recent conversation between Kenneth Wilsbach, who's commander of the Pacific Air Force's general, Ken Wilsbach, who talked a little bit about the problem set of trying to deter China in the South China Sea. And the B-21 figures very heavily in these plans, not just as a bomber. As a lot of people might be aware, the B-21 compared to the B-2 is actually smaller in terms of the payload that it can have. But because of its stealth capability, they envision it serving in a wide variety of different functions. Importantly, as an airborne data hub, which is going to be key to managing a lot of the drones, a lot of the other fighter platforms in the air, and also collecting data from other services, other sensors, from ships, from possibly soldiers on the ground, et cetera. So the B-21 does become sort of like an AWACS, but one that has stealth capability to hopefully avoid Chinese air defenses. And that's a sort of different role than a bomber's played in the past. But importantly, it still serves as a key portion of the nuclear triad of deterring nuclear conflict. So sort of like the F-35, which can fire and drop a nuclear weapon as well, unlike a lot of other fighter jets, you see the U.S. beginning to kind of emulate in some ways the strategic nuclear ambiguity of China compared to the Soviet Union, where you had very clearly designated bombers, subs, and of course intercontinental ballistic missiles making up a triad. The U.S. matched the Soviet Union in developing and proliferating a triad. The Chinese nuclear strategy is very much about some ambiguity built in there, fewer nuclear weapons, wider range of vehicles, and you see the U.S. now coming up with a new role for the B-21 in the Pacific that mirrors that strategy a little bit.
The general says that this can handle a heavy workload and that it's, he didn't say low maintenance, he said what, commonsensical maintenance? In other words, it's not going to break and be rotated quickly. Is that what he's telling us?
Yeah, the maintenance footprint is a little bit different than other, like the B-2. But importantly, this new role for the B-21 also assumes that you're able to do maintenance differently, and you're able to do a lot of things differently, more distributed, smaller human footprint across these different island chains and across these different places. So the U.S. has this concept called Agile Combat Engagement, or ACE. It's kind of a Cold War concept that they're now re-energizing for the deterrence mission in the Pacific, where you have fewer aircraft in a lot more places, as opposed to bunched up in big, very targetable locations. An example, obviously, Guam, South Korea, Japan. And so getting more maintenance crews forward positioned to more places so that you can do maintenance much more quickly in a lot of different destinations, that's very key to their mission now in making sure that they can actually have a deterrence effect in the Pacific.
It looks really cool. It looks like science fiction. It looks like an alien spacecraft. How is it to work with the B-52, which no one will give up on?
Well, that's the thing. No one wants to give up on it because it remains very important. But this serves as kind of the tip of the spear. So a B-52, that is a big, enormous aircraft. And if you watch Dr. Strangelove, you know that we're not getting rid of it anytime soon. But it is a relic of the Cold War in some ways. So this is going to see a lot more use because it has that multifunction capability. So whereas a great big historic Cold War bomber like that has one use, which is to project that you can drop a nuclear weapon on an adversary. This is something that isn't necessarily meant to be seen, but it is meant to be, its existence is meant to be known in whatever way the U.S. military decides to make it known. So this will serve as probably something that collects a lot more intelligence that refines how the military uses B-52s in the future. But because it's just so much more agile, expect to see a lot more use, whereas the B-52 remains something that you use if you're basically trying to intimidate an adversary, reminding them that you can drop a nuclear weapon on them.
And the B-21, that's the future. They're looking to deploy this across the Pacific. The general talks about building new runways or using new islands in the Pacific. I'm trying to imagine how they're going to deploy this in twos and threes, in squadrons. Have they talked about that, Patrick?
No, they haven't talked about it yet. Unlike a fighter jet, you don't necessarily need a squadron of these things. It's a bomber. It's meant not to be able to be seen. So bunching them all up, that's not necessarily something that would pay the same benefits as a fighter squadron. But in terms of, the U.S. military and the vulnerability that is just runways in the Pacific, they've got some strategies to, for instance, rapidly fix runways if they are hit by missiles. They've got, I was made aware of this. I didn't know it. Special cement that dries in about 3 hours. So you can start landing and flying planes off of runways after they're hit by missiles in less than a day. But, to be clear, the U.S. has fewer runway options in the Pacific than China has missiles. And the Air Force is aware of that, as is the rest of the Joint Force. So, you run into this problem of how do you keep air dominance in a place where every runway is visible and a vulnerability? And that's, speaks to some of the other things that the U.S. military is doing right now, developing new planes that can basically take off without a runway and still fly at the speed of a fighter jet. That doesn't exist yet as a platform, but that's something that DARPA is working on elsewhere with the military.
So the B-21 to control drones and to communicate with B-52s and the base. And now we go to the F-16 pilotless. That's another way of saying robotic. You report that they've been working with the F-16 for some years. What's new?
Right. So they've had a couple of different demonstrations where they've had autonomously flown F-16s just in little experiments going back to 2017, little one-offs. There's an aircraft called the Vista that's kind of a training for AI F-16 aircraft that can be self-flown. But now what they want to do is get a whole bunch of these, and not the Vista, but like real F-16s, develop autonomous capability for them, and then test them out probably at Edwards Air Force Base, in actual scenarios where we're really going to see now in the air how autonomous flying works, possibly in a staged or simulated combat experience. And that's going to help them create new concepts of operation for what to do with these next generation air defense systems with these new flying drones that they're developing. So this information that they get from the self-flying F-16s, that's going to refine basically how the Air Force does air warfare in the future with combinations of jets, bombers, and drones. But it also reinforces that, hey, you know, these things that we now consider legacy systems that, you know, the Air Force is trying to actually cut them in many ways from as they pursue more expensive so-called exquisite platforms that can't be targeted. You get new life out of them by sometimes importing new capability on there. And it's true, they're not stealth aircraft. You can see them. But without a human on board, you know, that's a new capability in many ways that you can add to the mix to create what commanders describe as new dilemmas for the adversary. So it really does just take an old car and make it new when you turn these things into autonomous systems. But first, they're going to try and develop whole new concepts of how to do air warfare in the age of autonomy using these self-flying F-16s.
And F-16s, they have lots of them. So that's why they're using them autonomously. Is this concept also applicable to F-35s or other fighter aircraft in future?
Well, yeah, the F-35 is supposed to be optionally manned. It's not necessarily best to optionally man it, but you can import optionally manned capabilities onto an F-35. The B-21 is optionally manned, so you can turn it into a drone. And, of course, the military has been very explicit that they would never deploy a nuclear weapon on a thing that wasn't being flown by a human pilot.
Right.
So that limits you a little bit. In many ways, I think it's sort of given the price tag of an F-35, there's maybe a little bit of reluctance to even use that capability on that aircraft, whereas the price tag of an F-16, you're developing, it's an expensive drone, but it's a cheap jet. And so now you have a little bit more capability there if you can take some of these things that were seen as obsolete and create new capability on them. But the controls, the flying of the F-35, I've talked to pilots that have done qualifications on it, and you know, they either it depends on how you frame it, whether it's complaining or rejoicing, but they say the thing basically drives itself already, even if you're already on it.
I'm speaking to Patrick Tucker, Defense One's technology editor. We've been in the air. We're going undersea. We're going to the sea for autonomous in the Navy. This is CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey, guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.